T-Mobile has invested billions to light up America's largest 5G network, from big cities to small towns, including right here in yours. And great coverage is just the beginning. Right now, families and small businesses can save up to 20% versus AT&T and Verizon when they switch. Visit your local T-Mobile store today.
Plan savings with 3 lines of T-Mobile Essentials versus comparable available plans. Plan features and taxes and fees may vary.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app. The biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
Now, and I appreciate it. Good morning, Annie. How are you?
Hey, good morning. I'm hanging in there, as you can see, based off my article.
Looks like you're a class of 2015. Is that right?
I graduated nursing school in 2014.
Tell me what prompted you to write this.
Honestly, I woke up one morning after my 6-day stretch at work, and I just needed to vent. I just needed people to know. And I mean, just to be very honest, like, no one is really staying home, and I get it, because they're fortunate. They haven't been affected by the virus. They don't know what's going on down there. And I mean, they're blessed that they haven't been. So they're just getting complacent and stir crazy. And it's not that you're stuck at home. Hey, guys, you're safe at home. I would love right now to be at home. I would love to be able to see my boyfriend or my family, but I literally can't see anybody because I don't want to risk anyone else's safety. And that's just because I see it firsthand. And I get it. Nobody else sees it. No one knows. And so I just needed to tell people, this is real. Please stay home. Don't get complacent. We're so close to making this work. We're so close to flattening that curve. Just a little bit longer, guys. Like, let's hang in there, especially with Easter coming up too. I just needed people to know it's brutal down there. We're all just having a hard time, but as nurses, we also just, you know, I don't know if you're really truly met a nurse, but they have that weird sense of humor, that kind of twisted sense of humor. And that's just because the stuff we see, we got to find some humor to make us laugh so we don't just get dragged down. And so we do that during our shifts, and then you come home and then you just process everything. And it just came out. I don't know. It just came out.
Tell me some of the things that you wrote, and maybe some of the things that you didn't, that, you know, those of us sitting here listening and me talking to you has no idea. We have no idea what's going on, but you see it every day.
So I guess just like kind of walk through a day really.
Sure.
Is, you know, I'm a day shift nurse. And so I come in and everyone has to take their temperatures at the door. You know, that's just protection for everybody. No matter where you work in the hospital, whether you're, you know, kitchen staff, housekeeping, doesn't matter. You all take our temperatures. You get a little sticker signifying that you're good, safe to go in. And then I go to my unit. And so I work for Our Lady of Lake in Baton Rouge. They're phenomenal through all this. And they provide us scrubs. So we don't have to wear our scrubs or our clothes. We don't have to go home and change. None of that. Like, they handle the virus 100%.
So you go in street clothes and change once you get there?
Yes. They're very protective of us in that sense. They want us to be completely healthy. They don't want us, you know, they're very protective of us. So including doctors, housekeepers, everyone that's in one of those units, which we currently have 10 of them opened, everyone that's in one of those units is in a set of hospital scrubs, like OR scrubs, basically. And so then I'll grab my scrubs, change. We take our temperature again. If you're on those specific units, you have to take your temperature and, you know, log it and everything. I'll go ahead and get report, this specific day, I was actually charge nurse, so I was kind of overseeing the whole unit. There's been days where you literally walk into shift, and I mean, it could be during shift change, or like, yeah, that person's not going to make it, or you start to see heart rate go down. And no matter how many times you see it, which I know this sounds absolutely terrible, but you have to remember, we're seeing probably once a day, maybe twice a day, maybe once every other day if we're fortunate, someone's passing. And it still doesn't become real. I can't really explain it, but you start to hear the alarm go off. You start to hear the dinging of whether it be the oxygen going down or whether it be the heart rate going down or the heart rate spiking and then all of a sudden having a decrease. And there was one day, I remember, it was after shift change. The doctor was on the other side on a different unit. And we just kind of all stood there. And we knew there was something else we could do. Like, they were on all the medicine. There was literally no other medicine that we could give this patient. And we just had to watch the heart rate go down. And I mean, collectively, the entire unit just went to that one room and we just all stood there in silence. And you just, you know, the doctor came running over and he just, you know, made sure no one was doing anything because you couldn't, you know, by putting on your gown, you're then going in there and being with the patient, you're using one of your gowns, your protective equipment, you're exposing someone to the virus. And that to us is probably the hardest thing, is that you can't go in there and you can't be with them. And so we just kind of collectively know in our heads, like, the best we can do is just be here as a team for this person on the other side of the glass window. And it's so hard, but we hear about all these shortages. Unfortunately, we don't have a shortage, and we're not near a shortage at Our Lady of the Lake for, like, protective equipment and gowns and masks. But it's also because we're implementing these things where you can't go in if you're not, you know, if it's not medically necessary. Humanly necessary, absolutely. We all want to go in there. We want to stand around this patient. We want to be there for them. But medically, we can't. So you can come on to a shift and that could be going on. You know, I've had a lot of night shift people come on and we have someone else that's passing and we're trying to do it peaceful and, you know, giving them a little bit of morphine so their breathing calms down. And sometimes it's unexpected, sometimes it's expected. So when it's expected, you can make it comfortable. You know, when it's unexpected like that, it just happened in a matter of minutes. You just got to go about the rest of your day. I mean, this is just the beginning of the day. This is not even the end. Like, I can't just take that and then just go home and, you know, cry it out. I can't. Like, I've got 12 hours to go. And
let
so
me,
it,
let me take a break here and pick it up, Annie. That's I think that's a lot for us to process just hearing you talk about it. So I don't imagine how y'all do it. And I don't think there's anything great other than the birth of a child would be somebody passing and leaving this life. And I don't know how you all handle that on a daily basis, not to mention during something like this. We're talking to Annie Siniglia, Siniglia, an ICU nurse, nice enough to spend some time with us. You heard how her day begins, and we'll continue to ask her to walk us through the some of her day when we come back. She's on the front line. Wow. We'll be back. WWL. Annie Siniglia is nice enough to spend an hour with us. She's an ICU nurse at a hospital in Baton Rouge, and she's, I guess, already walked us through the first hour or two of her day in the midst of all of this coronavirus, COVID-19 nightmare. And, you know, there's nothing, having been through both experiences with my daughter being born and my parents passing away, I don't think it gets any more real than when a child is born or than when somebody loses their life. As a nurse, That has to be particularly hard to go through. And in this case, I guess sometimes you are the last face that somebody sees, or as you were saying before, you can't even get in there to be with them when they go?
So usually in the ICU, not during the virus, we take pride in being able to allow these families to be with the patient or allow them to pass in a very humane manner and keep them comfortable and be by their side, be there with the family. You know, we have what we call like palliative trays, snacks, water, tissue boxes. You know, we're there for the family. We give them, you know, time with them. And the hardest part right now is because this virus is so highly contagious and because it is so brutal, as we call it, we don't want to put others at risk. It's just, you know, someone coming in and coming to just see their loved one. You know, we kind of did it in the very beginning when we first opened the unit, when we first opened the first unit or two. We would let family members come in and just be with them for 5 to 10 minutes and see them through the window. And it made us nervous because we were afraid that, you know, they were going to get it. They weren't properly leaving and cleaning themselves. You know, even though everything is behind a door and a window and it's a closed unit, you know, who's to say it's not on a countertop because we, you know, messed up, didn't clean it properly or whatever. It's just, it's not worth the risk for us. And, you know, our hospital debated this for hours and they came to the decision that it's safe for the public if we don't let them in. And so we do everything we can now to just make this as natural and humane as possible. But with this virus, it's just so hard because sometimes it's unpredictable. We don't know when they're going to pass. So like the other day, what I was talking about in my post, you know, this specific patient, they fought hard and we really thought, you know, we were going to have a decent outcome. We did because this patient was fighting so hard. And then it just got to a point where we had them what we call maxed out on all medication. And they were literally receiving every single medicine possible to keep them alive. And we were all rooting for this patient hard. And I had this patient for 5 days. And I walked in that morning and I looked at the blood pressure and I looked at the doctor and we looked at each other and I said, I'm calling the family. We're going to do the Zoom. It was Google Duo. It's like Zoom. Our hospital, you know, when they took away visiting hours, they worked hard to find a way that we could still have the families connect with their loved ones. And so they came up with a tablet, like an iPad, and it's connected to a rolling thing. And it's like Zoom, what everyone's been talking about, but it's Google Duo. And you have to download it. And sometimes we'll do FaceTime on this tablet. And so I called the family up and I done it with them the day before. And so I called them up and I said, look, I don't know when, but we know it's only a matter of time. Who do you want to call? Can they be ready in 30 minutes to do a chat, a video chat with the patient? And they like, okay, absolutely. They got off the phone. Everyone went and downloaded the app. You know, I called them. They gave me the numbers within 30 minutes. I mean, it wasn't even 9 o'clock. And I called them all. And I think the hardest part too was they had been asking me for the pastor to come on. And I tried, and I don't know if the pastor didn't download it or didn't register. I don't know. We couldn't get the pastor on, which I don't know why. It just kind of, that really bugged me the most that I couldn't get the pastor. And so we got him on, and then I have to gown up and put my gown on. I put my mask on, my goggles, and mind you, I have to clean my hands in between putting each item on. So it's a long process. And then I take the tablet with me in the room. And of course, you know, I have the patient looking decent. What we do is we cover up everything so that the family can't see the lines or anything, so that the patient looks like their sibling, like their family member, looks like a person. You know, we try our best to do that. And so I gave them time said their prayers. You know, how do you sit there and say goodbye to someone when you know you can't be there and you just don't, you can't fathom it because they've been gone already for so long. They've been away from the house. So you're just thinking, oh, they're just doing their quarantine, you know? Like, how do you have that closure? I don't know. And so we did the chat, and then, and I asked him, and I said, you know, I've been doing this for some time now, and people find it more comforting if they tell a story or if they sing a song or a gospel song and something that just kind of helps everyone and has that closure and has that memory, that good memory. And so then they sang, one of the siblings sang a gospel song, beautifully sung too. And I lost it. I mean, of course I'm behind the tablet because I didn't want them to see my teary eyed face, and my mask was wet because my nose was running because my eyes were running and I can't touch my mask. And I, and you know, my, you can't see my face, but all my coworkers knew what was going on, and the doctor and the nurse practitioner, and they would walk by and, you know, we'd make eye contact, and they would just, it would be that eye contact of like, we got you, we know. And unfortunately I can't stay in the room long because that's also exposing me, especially now that my mask is wet. And, but how do you tell a family, hey, we got to go, even though this is the last time you're going to ever see your family member. And unfortunately they're on a breathing tube and they can't wake up, but I know they hear you and I'm sorry, but I have to take the tablet away. You know, like, how do you tell them that? I just, it was, it's rough. And sometimes you have, those are your mornings, and sometimes those are your afternoons. Sometimes you get the forewarning like this family fortunately did, and sometimes you don't get the forewarning like the other patient. And so it's just, it's, I don't know. I at least took pride in the fact that I could connect the family one last time, that I could keep them safe, but they still had time with their family member. And I think that was just, it's moments like that that you have to grasp onto to be able to get through the next moment or the next hour or the next shift. You have to just grasp onto, okay, I did what I could. I gave them time with their family. Most families don't even get that right now during this virus. It's just, and then you, and then the biggest thing is when you come out and after, you know, we might be like coding a patient or something, or after coming out of this, you know, we're all very protective of each other. And for obvious reasons, we don't want each other to get sick or get the virus. And so sometimes you'll have people there walking you through the process of how to take off your equipment, because there's a specific process so you don't get, you know, any virus particles on you or in your mouth or in your nose or anything. And there's a very specific strategic way to it. And so there was one time where we had what we call coded another patient, when you, you know, give them all life-saving drugs instantly right away to try and keep them, you know, that like last chance we're giving you are all. And and I remember the nurse came out of that room when the doctor called it. She's like, all right, everybody come out, we've been here for 2 hours, we can't do anything. And so she calls everyone out, because the longer you're in there, the more exposure. And she had already known we were in there for so long. Well, I wasn't in there, I was outside, but that they were in there for so long. And you could hear the nurse, who was the nurse for that patient, just yell out, like, no, he can't die alone. Like, this patient can't die alone. And I mean, she, that nurse stayed in there with the patient because they were already in there. They're already gowned up. And when they came out, you know, she's crying. And the physician assistant is standing right there walking her through. You know, he's like, here, give me your goggles. I'll clean them. Okay, hand sanitize your hands. Now take off your mask. Okay, now you need to go wash your hands. Because you're not thinking that. You're thinking of, the patient. You're thinking of the family. You're thinking of the family that you've just updated. You know, you do updates 3 times a day. You're thinking of the family that you just told them, well, they're critical condition, they're high oxygen, you know, we're trying our best, and you just, I don't know.
I think we all need a break here for a second. And Annie, I can't even begin to tell you how much I admire your strength and your compassion. And the thing you do, the things you do and your colleagues do to just make this world a better place. So we're going to pause here and then we'll come back and we'll talk some more to Annie Cerniglia, an ICU nurse. And for those of us that have wondered what it's like on the front lines in an ICU as these heroes respond to the coronavirus, we're getting some pretty strong images. We'll be back, WWL. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to Annie Cerniglia, an ICU nurse, about being on the front lines of the COVID virus, and it's a pretty... pretty sobering conversation. Annie, I got a text from our friend Steve Cord, who is about as big and bad and tough of a man as you would ever want to meet in your life. And he said, it's tugging hard at his heartstrings. And it's true, because I think the strength that you and your colleagues exhibit, and Steve knows that as well, is far beyond bench pressing 300 to 500, whatever, however many pounds he does. I see a quote here.
Go ahead.
No, you go ahead.
We just kind of lean on each other at this point, especially because, just to put it into another perspective for you, so right now I'm quarantined because I work in the COVID unit, you know, because I deal with these patients. And so I can't see the person that I need the most. I can't see my boyfriend. I can't see my family. I can't hug people. You know, if you read my post from WWL, it said in there when the family came to pick up the belongings, I just wanted, like, they looked like they needed a hug. Maybe I looked like I needed a hug. I know I needed a hug, but I couldn't. Like, I had to sit there with my fingers, you know, clasped in each other, holding them really tight, holding my own hands really tight to my body so I could fight that urge to hug. And you know, it's just another thing that others don't realize. Hey, you get to be at home with your loved ones right now. And I know they drive you crazy, and that's what loved ones do. They drive you crazy. But also find a little bit of appreciation in that right now, that you get to be with your loved ones. Like, I don't get you. Like, I'm sitting here in my apartment by myself on my balcony in my chair, and just crying my eyes out, retelling these stories, and I don't get to go inside to someone that's going to hug me right now. I mean, yes, my boyfriend's absolutely supportive. I know he's listening right now, and his family and my, but I know my family is listening, but I don't get to go and be with them. I mean, they all Zoom me and they FaceTime me. It's not the same. It's not the same.
You know, I'm looking at a quote here from what you wrote, and it said, 3 hours go by and we notice that a patient is on their way to God. How hard is it to deal with this? I would think at least once an hour, and to know that you're going to be the last person that this person sees before, I mean, they begin their next journey. That's talk about that, if you will, Annie, about the whole process, because after you develop a relationship with these patients, do you?
Yeah, you do, even with the families, to be honest. I mean, I can still tell you that patient sibling's name. I mean, I will forever remember that. And, you know, I could tell you the families that I update and the tears that I hear. And, you know, there was, you just have to go with it and tuck it away. And then when you can, you just vent later to your friends. Like, I have a coworker, because we're both in the COVID unit, she can come over and we're just going to have wine and vent today. You know, I mean, that's all we can do. Like, we just, I don't know. I know for me, I'm religious. I'm a very strong Catholic. And I remember coming out of my first Sunday in the COVID unit. And so every Sunday, my boyfriend and I would go to Mass. Being a nurse in the hospital, you work every other weekend. Mm-hmm. And so fortunately, at Our Lady of the Lake, it is a Catholic hospital. And they do host Mass every Sunday at 7:30 p.m., where before this they did. And he would always drive to the hospital and meet me for Mass after work. And it's just something that it's the reason I have my strength. I mean, I really have no other reason except God has given me the strength, because I don't feel like a superhero. I don't feel like I'm, you know, being a nurse right now, to be very honest, because I can't go in there and I can't take the time to bathe the patient and get them fresh and clean. You know, I can't change their sheets because that requires more than one nurse, and we can't bring more than one nurse in the room right now for protection reasons, for exposure to the virus reasons. It's just, it's the path of the virus, and I can't do any of that. And I feel like I'm not doing my job. I feel like I'm actually a really terrible nurse, to be honest. I don't feel like a hero. You know, I can't. And so you just kind of, you got to rely on God at this point, and you got to rely on your coworkers. And I know the doctors have been very phenomenal and there with us, and our managers and everyone has, you know, they kind of come down and they come down to every unit and they take their time and they ask us how we're doing. And, you know, like, I know my manager personally has texted me a couple of times making sure I was doing okay. My coworkers in the neuro ICU, because I'm traditionally a neuro nurse by trade, they've texted me like, hey, are you okay? How you're doing? You know, we just got to rely on each other. And that's just what it is. It's a family. It's a family bond. And we know we're going through it together, because when you go home, your family doesn't even understand what's going on. And to be honest, I don't want to spend my few moments on the phone with my boyfriend talking about my day.
Of it all, what is it that hits you the hardest? Is it knowing that the people that come in for the most part are not going to leave? Is it having to tell the families that their loved one is either gone or not going to make it, or actually standing there and watching somebody leave this life? I don't know
above.
If it... Garden me?
It's all the above. It's all the above. So, like, there was a family member. So they weren't married, and therefore they weren't the point person. We have what we call like a point person, or the next of kin that you give updates and you talk to. And I had been communicating with this person, you know, every step of the way, even though they weren't married, the patient and this person wasn't married. I felt for them, and I was like, yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, I'll update you. That's okay. And you could just hear it in their voice when they heard the patient was positive for COVID. Now, we don't tell them, the doctors tell them that they're positive for COVID, or the doctors tell them that they passed. But because this person and I had kind of developed a little bit of a relationship, they turned around and called me and said, is it true? And I said, I'm sorry, it is. And they're just, you know, you could hear the cries on the phone. It doesn't make it easier watching someone pass to the next life. It doesn't make it easier to hear the family members or their updates. It's all the above. It's hard. There's really not one that's harder than the other, because it just kind of piles together over the day.
Is there a part of it that feels sacred to you?
I don't know. I guess I just don't really process it until I come home. And then I'll sit there and I'll, when I'm watching the patient pass, I will say my prayers. You know, I'll pray for that patient. I'll pray for my coworkers. I'll pray for me. And then I come home and I'll usually, you know, it's hard to sleep at night. And so I'll usually try and go to bed, like listening to the rosary or something, hoping I'll sleep through the night. But it's just, it's a virus. It's why we're so adamant about people, please stay home. I get the stir crazy. I'm sure I would be the same. I get the Easter's coming up and you want to celebrate with your family and have that Good Friday crawfish boil. Please don't. Just stay home. I don't want you to be one of my stories.
Well, I don't know how you do it. I don't know where you get the compassion. I don't know where you get the heroism. I think it is something that the good Lord gives you, and I think your patients are lucky. I think we're lucky. I think the hospital's lucky to have you. In terms of people, Annie, staying to themselves and doing what the CDC is asking, for a patient that comes in, what is their side of this? What is their experience?
So I've had a couple of patients. So typically, not always, but sometimes patients will come in when they start getting very short of breath and they have to go on a little bit of oxygen. So they're still coherent and they can still FaceTime their families, all this wonderful, like, you know, you sit there and pray that they don't have to get put on a breathing tube. And so they come in and, you know, I took care of someone, I think it was 2 weeks ago, maybe, I don't know, I lost count. But this patient, the poor thing, she kept having to use the restroom. And every time she would get up to use the restroom, and remember, these are makeshift units. They're not, all of them are not true units. They were solely opened for this virus. Before this, they were closed because they were going to be renovated. So some of these units don't have bathrooms in them. All of these rooms don't have curtains in them because with it being on the curtain, it's exposure. You know, when one person goes in, they're going to be what we call a rule out. They might not be positive, but let's say the person before them was positive, and curtains are very difficult to clean. And so you don't want to risk this curtain being the reason this patient that might not have been positive now becomes positive. So we had to take all the curtains down. And so, you know, you now have this patient that's with it, coherent, and I can't get them up to the bedside commode because their oxygen starts to drop. Totally with it, you know, like you and I have to put them on the bedpan, and bless this patient's heart. This patient just felt so bad for constantly having to go to the bathroom. And I looked at him and I said, do not apologize. This is the virus. This has nothing to do with you. Don't even think of it that way. And I remember this patient just kept listening to their gospel music because they were very afraid, very afraid. They can see everything in the unit. So they can see when we all rush to a room, they can see when, you know, we're trying to laugh or something just to lighten up the situation. They can see when someone has to be intubated. And so, unfortunately, they were very afraid. And, you know, that patient even told me, they said, I can tell you love your job. I said, yes, I actually do. Just some days are harder than the others. And they were just listening to their gospel music. And typically when a patient in general, when we start to see them not being able to hold their oxygen very well and their numbers start to go down, and that's when we know we need to intubate them, we will let them FaceTime their families before they get intubated. And it sucks because you know the statistic. You know that not many come off the breathing tube. So you know this is the last time they can see their family, and sometimes they can't even talk. They're so out of breath. And we have like a face mask blowing oxygen into their nose and their mouth. And that's the part that probably sucks the most is them. Everyone kind of knows, and they look to us and they look at our faces outside the window and they look at us staring around. And usually it all kind of happens at once. It usually all kind of happens around 5 o'clock, to be honest. And so everybody gets everything done before then. You know, we get that third time going into the room, you get it done before 5 because things start happening at 5, 6 o'clock. And so we had just got done with coding a patient and they didn't make it. And then the doctor was giving us a pep talk because we all needed it. And then you turn around, now you have to intubate this patient emergently, and you're giving her time to FaceTime the families. And, you know, I looked at the doctor and I said, with all due respect, I know you don't mean it, but you need to change your face. This patient's looking at us. We need to smile. Let them know it's going to be okay. And the doctor turned to me and they said, I really appreciate that because I didn't realize it was on my face. And I said, no, we don't realize it. We don't realize sometimes because we're so in the moment. We know and we see like 5 steps ahead that this might not end well.
Annie, I can't begin to tell you how much we appreciate everything you do. My daughter's name is Annie, and I'm going to think of you every time I talk to her. I think if somebody wants to help y'all, what can they do?
Yeah, so our biggest thing that we absolutely love and we thrive on right now is the food donations. And it makes a difference when you don't have to come home. You come home from work, you have to go straight to the shower. You know, you got to strip down right there. And then whether it be outside your garage or like right inside your apartment, the last thing I want to do is cook. And we're not allowed to leave our units to protect the other hospital staff. And so we can't go to the cafeteria. Now, yes, the lake does provide us food and they do their best. And one of the things that they're doing is they're providing us with like bottled waters, like cases of bottled water, cases of energy drinks, like Monster energy drinks. There's been a lot of restaurants that are donating, but they can't donate the amount of food that we need to feed all of our staff that are in these 10 units. And so one thing the hospital does is they pay the other part of it. And so if what people do on the outside, which also helps the economy, is they can donate to it's Our Lady of the Lake. It's OLOLRMC.com. And if you go to that website, they'll put on there, it has on there how you can help, whether you're making face masks, and these face masks are for the patients, they're not for us, because we have plenty of equipment that we don't need them, but it's for the patients, for like when they're going through the hospital, going to the units and everything. You can donate money, and that money, it does go to food for us. Like they've been phenomenal, and they've paired with Drusella's and all those.
You are phenomenal. It's OLOLRMC.com. God bless you.
Yeah.
And we'll be keeping you in our prayers as well. I appreciate your time.
Thank you very much.
You bet. God bless you. We'll be back. WWL.
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of 4 amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get 4 iPhone 15s on us and 4 lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.